This podcast replay is brought to you by Craig's Inns, Acura of Pembroke Pines, where you can get the TLX 2020 model for $209 a month, $29.99 due at signing, plus tax, tag, and registration. Check it out at 15601 Pines Boulevard.
All right, let's rock and roll. We're going to talk a little baseball. Because baseball has been very, very good to me, and Jordan McPherson does an excellent job of covering the Marlins on an everyday basis for the Miami Herald. Make sure you follow him on Twitter like I and so many others do at J_McPherson1126. I saw him masked up on the plane and ready to go. Let me ask you first of all, because I also saw the picture, Jordan, and welcome aboard, my man. I saw the picture of the dog. I have four dogs at home. I'm a dog lover. So I saw his or her disappointing face looking at you as you were leaving. So let me ask you, are you geeky like I am? Do you have a camera in the house so you can, like, check on him?
Unfortunately, I don't. The dog, just to get some words, that's my boy Milo. He's going to be 9 in a few months. And he, again, he lives with my parents up in Atlanta. That's where I was for the Braves series. And I ultimately stayed with them throughout the Yankee series and then was going to be determining where I was going from there, whether it was coming to Chicago, fortunately, or going back home. But I only get to see him maybe a handful of times a year whenever I'm traveling for the Marlins or get some vacation time.
Right.
And it gets to the point where with him, whenever I call my mom, she looks at him and goes, "Where's the boy?" And he just runs up to my room. And then comes back down disappointed when he realizes I'm not there. So the few times I do get to see him, it's just so much fun because he's just so loving and so much fun. It was really fun to see him. And I tried to sneak my suitcase out before he saw me, but he caught me about a half second too early.
Right. Oh, man. Dogs are the best, my brother. They are.
Yes, they are.
And I would imagine you don't have one now because of all your travels and covering the team. You would leave he or she alone a lot, right? That's probably what it is.
That's correct. Yeah, I don't have any personally with me down in South Florida. My brother has two who I go up and see them every now and then. And then the two that we have up in Georgia, but personally, I don't have any in my house, no.
That's right. All right, well, one day I'll invite you so you can, play with four dogs at the same time.
And let's do it.
Yeah, exactly. I got a big one and three small ones around the house. All right, so have you had a little deep dish pizza while you've been there already for 24 hours?
Not yet, but that is the plan for tonight. I mean, we have baseball starting about a half hour, so my plan is to just veg on the hotel room, have a pizza, and just go back and forth between watching the games that are on today and finishing up my preview material to set the stage for the first Marlins playoff game in 17 years tomorrow.
All right. I love it. Now, let me ask you, how is that beat nowadays? Do you guys get along? Do you hang out with Fossaro? How many people have been sent on the road to cover even the Marlins?
It's just been me on the road. I mean, David Wilson, my colleague, he did the one series that was in Tampa.
That's right.
But I did the two Atlanta trips. I did the Philly and Baltimore trips at the start of the year. Yeah, the Herald's the only publication that's been on the road this year. We covered, I think the final tally was 43 of the 60 games on the road. Obviously, we couldn't do anything in New York because of the quarantines that were in place. And then the five-game series in D.C. put in the quarantine, I think it was 3 days before the Marlins were supposed to go up there.
Wow.
So, but every other game, the Herald has covered in person. And in terms of the beat, Joe Fossaro and I, we've been really good friends since I joined the beat last year. He helped me out a lot early on with just maneuvering through a lot of the day-to-day stuff, especially with me being one of the younger guys on the beat at the time. And then Andre Fernandez and I were good buddies. The Herald, he's been able to get back in the groove, and he's been doing some things here and there. He's my co-host on our podcast now. So I have a really good rapport with the guys who are on the beat. Granted, there are only so many who are doing things full-time with the team right now.
Right, yeah, it's amazing. I'm sure more will be added because, obviously, the Marlins are trending in the right direction now, which is really, really cool. And, You know, I talked about this on my show, Jordan. The best part about all of this is I know that, unfortunately, the Marlins got screwed with no minor league season. So a guy like J.J. Bleda and other guys really needed a full minor league season. That would have been to their benefit. These young guys at the major league level could have used an extra 100 games on top of the 60 that they played in order for development. But how priceless is it that these young Marlins are going to get playoff experience? That's freaking awesome. It really is.
It definitely is. And even if they didn't make playoffs, just the fact that they had a two-month season where a lot of them, granted, most of them were only here for the last month, but they were in a playoff push from the second they got called up. Just being in that mindset instead of the usual coming up in September, the Marlins are already 15 or so games out and they know that they're just playing to get experience.
Right.
The fact that they're playing meaningful games in September when they get called up, knowing that every at bat they take, every ground ball or fly ball they field, every time they try to do something on the base pass, it has an impact on what the team is going to be able to do moving forward this season. That's completely invaluable. You see how they're able to adapt to knowing that they have certain roles on the team. You see how Monte Harrison is basically grown into embracing being the eighth and ninth inning base runner, but you're down the run, you need a guy who's gonna be aggressive and take every chance he can to make sure they can tie or win a game. You see Jazz Chisholm, who finally the bat started to come around the last couple of days, and his defense, oh my goodness, is so much fun to watch. Yeah. You see these guys getting this experience and sort of finding their own during that playoff push. That's going to be great for them, not only going into this week and hopefully beyond this year, but in 2021, when you go back into the 162 and you have to find a way to grind through everything and make sure that you're able to set yourself up to be competing in September, October, and beyond.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's absolutely phenomenal for them. The rotation, is it Alcantara tomorrow? Who's game two? Who's game three? What's the rotation for the Marlins?
We haven't gotten anything official yet. Mattingly's supposed to speak about 5:30 Eastern time, but it's got to be Alcantara game one. How they maneuver through games two and game three are really something that I'm interested in seeing how they unfold it, because it's going to be Pablo Lopez or Sixto Sanchez going 2-3, just not sure what the order is. But, I mean, Mattingly says he has trust in all three guys, and understandably so. Sandy's obviously been their ace since the start of the year, and he's picked it up over these last five games. I think it's a 2-3 ERA over his last five starts. He did such a damn good job in that clinching game on Friday against the Yankees, 7 1/3. You could see how upset he was when Donnie came and took him out in the eighth, knowing that he wanted to get out of that inning himself. Pablo's been the de facto ace, or he was the de facto ace during that first month when everyone was in quarantine. And then Sixto, yes, his last two starts have been rough, but if you look at the first five when he's facing somebody for the first time, he's been lights out. The Cubs haven't seen him in person yet. So that, I think, is going to be something that could give Sixto an advantage in trying to get out of a little bit of a rut that he was in the last two starts when the Nationals and the Braves just started finding ways to hack away at him.
Wow, that's, you know, I didn't think of it that way, and I really love that they hadn't seen Sixto yet. And Sixto's that's a dude you need to adjust to, and it's going to take you a little bit with the way he throws. And so when I look at that, somebody asked me earlier on the show, do I think the Marlins have a chance? And I said to them, well, wait a minute. In a 60-game season, they proved they were good enough to get into the playoffs. They were better than two other teams because they're a six seed in the process. So, hell yeah, they got a shot in a three-game series. What do you say to that? Do they have a shot in a three-game series to beat the Cubs?
With a three-game series, anything can really happen. That's why I'm really excited to watch, obviously, the Marlins to see how they do against the Cubs, but there's a really good chance you're going to see some upsets here in the playoffs. I mean, you're looking at Atlanta, you've got the Braves against the Reds. The Reds have one of the better rotations in baseball. You can see upsets there. You have the A's against the White Sox. You've got, obviously, the Yankees are a five seed, so if they beat the Indians, that'll be an upset. That could be a good matchup. But with the Marlins specifically, I think it's going to come down to, I mean, starting pitching is going to define the series between Alcantara, Pablo, and Sixto for the Marlins. And then you have Kyle Hendricks, Yu Darvish, who very well might be the Cy Young winner this year, and John Lester for the Cubs. It's going to be a really good pitching matchup. And it's a matchup of the Cubs, who have the postseason experience and the age and the knowing how to maneuver this on their side, versus the power-throwing, up-and-coming, high-end potential Marlins. And it's going to be that clash of old versus new. And watching that unfold will more than likely determine who moves on to the first round of bubble play next week and who ends up going home.
All right, so let's have a little fun with this. Jordan McPherson, of course, from the Miami Herald, Marlins beat writer, joining us here. Follow him on Twitter at J_McPherson1126. Jordan, obviously, the pitchers have to pitch well. We know that already as it is. You just talked about it. If they're going to win this series, give me two or three bats that must come through in order to win two games.
Brian Anderson, number one. He's been very steady. Obviously, he's had some months earlier, but you're seeing that him finally morph into the guy we were hoping to see this year as a breakout year three. He's got 11 home runs. I think it's up to 30-some RBI. If he can provide that steady presence in the five, I think he's been hovering between the four and six spots in the lineup. I think that'll be very beneficial. They're going to need Corey Dickerson to step up. That's going to be number two, especially when you have righties on the mound and you have Corey leading off. You need him to be that high average guy that he's been for his whole career and that we haven't really seen this year. He's had some strides. We've seen some bright moments, but he needs to find a way to make that click right now and be one of those veterans. And also, something that I didn't realize and I probably should have, this is also Corey Dickerson. He's 9 years in the league. This is his first playoff run, despite the success that he's had this year. So we're going to see a little bit of that for him as well. And then you need one of or both of Garrett Cooper and Jesus Aguilar to bring the power. They've both been those power guys in the cleanup spot. If you can get one or both of them to start to tee off against tough pitching, that's going to do wonders for the team this week.
All right. The other question that I would have, we talked about the starting pitching. We talked about the batting. I think Kinsler has done a really nice job with the saves. The middle of that pen, is it ready for this?
That's going to be the interesting spot because we've seen some good things as of late. I mean, Yimmy Garcia has been one of the best relievers in baseball this year. James Hoyt has been a very pleasant surprise to me. Especially when you consider he was one of the guys who they brought in from that reconstructing the roster post-COVID. And he's been the guy who you bring in with one or two outs and a runner or two on base to get out of jams. And he's gotten out of just about every single jam that he's been thrown into this year. So if you get to a sixth, seventh inning situation where you need that, he's been that guy to get you out of it. Richard Bleier as your primary lefty, that's going to be my main thought of concern. I've liked what I've seen from him at times, but I just haven't seen enough to know if he's going to be ready for this moment. That'll be interesting to see. And Boxberger, I think he'll be ready, but there's just been a lot of inconsistency there, which makes me think that Yimmy might be your better option as the eighth inning guy. And then to set things up for Kinsler if you're in the same situation.
Yeah, Boxberger is one of the leaders in holds on that team, man, overall. And he averages a strikeout an inning, too, on top of all of that. He's done a nice job.
Yeah, he has, but there's also – you've seen for every two or three good situations, you've seen an implosion. So it's sort of finding out if you're going to – if Donnie's going to go with that risk-reward factor with it, especially when you've seen how good Yimmy's been coming into the seventh. And Donnie even saying before that he's between Yimmy, Boxberger, and Kinsler, that he's fine with all three of them in any of the 7-8, 9-inning roles. So I think he'll stick with Boxberger in the eighth, but I would not be surprised if we saw him flip Boxberger with Yimmy.
So what's the prediction, my brother? What happens, Jordan?
I think it's going to come down to whoever wins game one is going to win the series, but I think the series is going to go three games no matter what. And I went back and forth with this when I was doing some stuff last night. I think the Marlins are going to take it in three, but I think it's going to be a nail-biting series the entire way.
There you go. Follow him on Twitter at J_McPherson1126. Be prepared to get hungry later on, because when he's eating that deep dish pizza, he will take a picture of it and he will make us all jealous, because I know that's what's going to happen. You know, I'm going to want some of that, and I'm going to be 1,000 miles away and I'm absolutely screwed, which is just, you know, depressing. But hey, listen, so you get to be at Wrigley Field tomorrow, right?
Correct. Yeah. Oh. Yes, that is correct. I can get in as early as 4 hours before the game.
Will they have fans?
They will not have fans.
Okay. All right. So no fans, just media and the players. You know you're a lucky some bitch, right? I mean, because when I go to the Inter games, and I'm calling them, obviously, because I do the pre, half, and post and all that, and I'm sitting there, and we have the stadium to ourselves, and the team is there. That's like, it's weird, but there's also a little part of it that's kind of cool, that it's like, wow, we're the only ones here for this event. This is pretty awesome. So that's kind of pretty cool for you tomorrow.
No, it really is. I mean, I was at Wrigley Field for the Marlins series against the Cubs last year, mm-hmm. and just knowing what that atmosphere is like on a normal night, right. and knowing when I go in there tomorrow, none of that is going to be there. I can already tell it's going to feel really eerie. I felt that way with opening day with the Phillies,
right.
when knowing that that place is usually completely packed and just feeling you can hear a pin drop at first pitch. It takes a little while to get used to, but in the same vein, it's playoff baseball, man. No matter what, there's ways for everyone to get hyped up about this, whether they're in the stands or not.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. Jordan, be safe, my brother. Enjoy the baseball. Enjoy the deep dish pizza. Have a cold one on me, my friend. You be good, and thank you for taking some time.
Thanks so much, man.
You got it. There you go. Good stuff. And let me tell you, he wrote an article. You got to go check out Jordan McPherson's article 2 days ago. He wrote an article that was just absolutely awesome, kind of encapsulating everything that went on in the season. And it was, if you didn't follow the Marlins season, it was a great way of catching up with everything that's gone on. And I thought it was fantastic. He did a really good job with that article. Always does a good job, man. And always nice enough to come on. Kenneth Cleveland gives us a little extra love on the Super Chat. He says, Big O, tell Bill he's on the first shift tonight. Tell him he's working the VIP room tonight. There you go, Bill. You're working VIP tonight. Drew Boo brings us a little love on the Super Chat. And in typical classy Drew Boo fashion, he says, Bill, how are you feeling? Since people knew that you had a stuffed up ear yesterday.
You know what? These drops, put them in. 30 minutes, doubled the time. Instead of 15, 30, let it sit. Got the syringe thing for your ear, special apparatus. Boom, done deal. I'm fixed. Like that.
About that?
No doctor needed.
It's a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Thank you for asking.
There you go. Let's see. Orlando, I think in order for the Panthers to be successful consistently, I think the ownership group for the Miami Heat has to buy them from the current ownership group. That the Panthers have now, I don't think the owners are the problem. They just have to find the right person to run the organization. They inherited Dale Talon, who came with incredible credentials from Chicago. So there was no reason to fire him. But as time went on, you kind of noticed that Dale Talon's decisions aren't making any difference anymore. And he is not collecting the kind of players you need to win a championship. So now the owners get to put their own imprint. Look, you know what it is? It's Stephen Ross inheriting Bill Parcells. And he unfortunately, you know, what are you going to do? Bill Parcells was not here to work. Stephen Ross figured it out, and then he brought in a couple of other people. He hit on the wrong people, and then finally he made the change that I think is now headed in the right direction with Chris Greer. and Brian Flores. But it took him a little while. Well, that's what happens sometimes with owners. They it takes a while for them to figure everything out, and it's not their fault. Nobody thought that Dale Tallon was going to be terrible. Everybody thought Dale Tallon would do some of the things he did in Chicago, and he didn't, unfortunately. So now you make the decision and you move on, and now they have Zito, and that's their guy. Now let's give the owner – remember, this ownership group went and paid for that goalie. This ownership group has paid for all the young players to be re-signed. It's not like they're cheap, dude. Be careful, okay, what you ask for. And I know the Arison family is awesome, but they have no interest in owning hockey. So I get that you're, you know, you've got an idea or something, but what I want to tell you is that I think the concept of your idea or the centerpiece of your idea or your statement, I think, is wrong. I don't think the owners are the problem. I think the owners are great. I just think the owners have got to figure out and put the right person in place. Okay? Steven Ross has not done well early on. I think now he kind of figured it out with Greer and Flo. But I never wanted to get rid of Ross. Why? Because, dude, the guy will fix up the stadium, fix up the property in the stadium, give you a new practice facility, save the tennis center. I mean, the guy is a complete positive to our community, man. He helps make our community better. I know he's a businessman. He's there to make money, but the tennis thing could have gone by the wayside. And if he didn't really want to win in football, he doesn't have to go to the extremes that he goes to, and he could just go half-assed like they do in Cincinnati every year. You know what I mean? So I disagree with you. I think Vinny Viola and Doug Cifu are awesome. I love those guys. I want them to succeed. I think they will succeed. They just got to find the right guy. But when you have an owner that's willing to spend, don't be so quick to get rid of them. Okay?
Hey, listen. Tallon wants you to know that his time down here in Florida was very successful.
Oh, yeah.
He's become a scratch golfer, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. And millions in the bank. Rays fans are the worst. They can't get anyone in the stadium unless Boston or New York is in town. Well, Super Boom Shack, there's an issue there, okay? You have to understand that the Rays never keep anybody. So there's never a player that they can identify forever. The longest that they ever kept was Longoria. And then they still ended up getting rid of him. But they never really have kept a core of players around. That's what I've said of Jeter and Sherman, that in order to really prove that you're committed – okay, so far you're doing a good job of reloading the minors and developing young guys. But those young guys will eventually become players that you want to keep. Are you willing to keep, you know, 5, 6, 7 players that will be your core? And that's where Jeter and Sherman will be tested. And Tampa never keeps a core around. They do a great job of developing and drafting and rotating and all that, but what they do is they – ship one guy in and ship him back out. And ship one guy in and ship him back out. And it's impossible to create. Put it this way. If Tampa's willing to support a hockey team, don't you think they would support a baseball team? You know what I mean? So if they're packing it for a hockey team, that's because the hockey team gives a crap about winning. The baseball team does just enough to tease you, but doesn't win anything. And they don't keep their players around. It's hard to build anything that way. Mark says, well said on Delonte West and depression, Big O. Hats off to you. Thank you, sir. We just have to be a little bit more sensitive with all that kind of stuff. That's all. Big O, Bill, fellow Dolph fans, has Arnav been around today? No, I don't think I've seen that guy, no. That's the guy who was saying all crazy stuff yesterday, right? Let's see. What else do we have here? Stefano's in Key Biscayne. Good payphone there. I don't know about the payphone, but I do remember Stefano's. What was Stefano's? Was a Friday night? Or a Sunday?
No,
it was Friday.
Friday, because Friday. Sunday was...
Sunday was the one over there by the bridge, right on the other side of the third bridge.
But God, what was it?
I forgot. Sundays.
Sundays on the Bay.
Sundays on the Bay.
Right?
Yes.
Early in the day was Monty Trainor's. Sunday night was Sundays on the Bay.
You went to the other side of the third bridge, and you went to Sundays on the Bay. I remember that.
For me, keep it. Can't Sonesta Beach, man.
Oh, yeah. We used to go there. Yeah. We'd go out on a Friday night and get hammered, obviously. Long Friday night. You get back from 12:35 or whatever. Because we'd go first to Broward, okay? We were always Broward guys. We'd go to the Broward clubs first. And then we'd go to the Dade clubs after because they were open till 5. And then you get home and it's late as hell. And then you wake up like, what was it, like by 10 or 11, we're up to go to the brunch, right?
Yes. And then by the pool.
And we go to Sonesta Beach and go hang out there and just eat away at our hangover, I remember, back in the day.
The other thing out there, the country club, the golf and country club.
Yes.
Obviously, me working for Royal Caribbean, blah, and they had the senior PGA tour there. But it was the first time we ever played the QB1.
Yes, I remember that.
Okay.
Cherries on the green.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Good job.
Yeah. Cherries on the green. That was, what was the name of the guy from Super Q? I'll see you at Cherries on the Green. Super Q. What was that guy's name that had the, that he had that fake DJ voice? Oh, man. What was his name? Come on. Somebody tell me. Somebody tell me. What was it? What was the guy from Super Q? I'll see you at Cherries on the Bay. Oh, man. I forgot that guy's name. Oh, man. Jean-Luc says, LOL, I grab my phone to do some work stuff and end up on the Big O Show. I love it. I love it. Zach Rabb loves the conversation. Appreciate it, Zach. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Let's see. What else do we have here on the Boom Shack? Big O, I need to call Julius. Where's the payphone? The guy's name was Mike Hunt.
Hey, I just thought of this. Do we have playoff baseball starting right now?
Yeah.
2 o'clock,
yes,
right?
Yes.
American League starts today. I know the Yankees go. Obviously, I know the Yankees start at 7. But
yeah, well, primetime. You got to save the heavy hitters for last.
I'm a little bit surprised by that because
it's New York, bro.
We haven't been very much heavy hitter.
It's New York.
We've been getting heavy hit.
It's New York.
Okay?
It's money.
I know.
Viewers.
I get it.
Viewers.
I get it.
New York will have the most viewers, not just there, worldwide.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay. No doubt.
Worldwide.
Yeah, I get it.
Okay.
Look.
Cubans getting off a raft. Oye, los Yankees. Quiero ver los Yankees. You know.
Yes.
Like, they've never been in our country, but they know the Yankees.
Oh, for sure.
That's it. They just want to see the Yankees. You know what I mean? So,
look.
You know, it's
we could hit 6 home runs in the next 3 games.
Dude hasn't eaten for 6 days, been floating in the Gulf for 5 days.
Yeah, all he wants
sunburned,
is some baseball.
And Yankee, ¿dónde están los Yankees? And they just want to see the Yankees. They don't care about anything else.
When I saw that, I was like, man, we really don't deserve that stage.
Yeah. No, you're right.
We were 5-15, then we were 10-1.
Yeah, streaky as hell.
And killing it, and then we stumble, fumble, bumble to the end of the season. I mean, it was horrible.
Yeah.
But I am okay. The Marlins are in. We got something to watch tomorrow at 2 o'clock. I'm happy.
Yep. Julius, search Super Boom Shack AC/DC. I put some videos up a few years back. Nice. Of AC/DC? Like what? What'd you put? What is there something like that doesn't float around much that we haven't seen or something?
And if it's anything like those redone videos that they have, the ones from Def Leppard that we saw, and man, you want to talk about some killer shots.
I remember now.
What is it?
The DJ's name was Leo.
DJ Leo?
Leo. Yes. I think it was, right? Leo, I see you at Cherries on the Green. He had that fake voice. I think it was Leo. Yes. I think so. I don't know. You guys are going to have – somebody's going to have to help me out, correct me, because it was a long time ago. And, you know, those kind of voices are hard to remember. All right, let's see what we got here. Music news. A little a little, what's it called, birthdays. Let's start off in music with, you want Gene Autry? There you go. He was born in 1907 on this day, by the way. Passed away in 98 and 91. Anyway, let me really get to a couple of things. Billy Strange, born in 1930 on this date, singer-songwriter, guitarist Billy Strange was a session musician with the famed Wrecking Crew. I keep telling you guys, you better watch that documentary, Wrecking Crew. Yeah, he appeared on songs for Elvis Presley, including A Little Less Conversation, Nancy and Frank Sinatra's Something Stupid, and worked with The Ventures, Willie Nelson, The Everly Brothers, Wanda Jackson, The Beach Boys, Randy Newman, and Nat King Cole, among others. He passed away 2012 on February 22nd at the age of 81. You want some great balls of fire? You certainly don't want your balls on fire. But Jerry Lee Lewis was born on this day back in 1935. Had the number one single in the U.S. in 1958 with Great Balls of Fire. It was a 57 multi-million seller. Whole lot of shaking going on. What else do we have here? Mark Farner, by the way, celebrating a birthday today. American singer, songwriter, guitarist, best known as the lead singer and lead guitarist for Grand Funk Railroad. Number one single was their version of Everybody's Doing a Brand New Dance Now. Come on, baby, do. There you go. Todd Rundgren, by the way, was the producer of that song. Most successful song for them in the U.S. The band sold over 20 million albums. Grand Funk. I still remember to this date the 45 of Grand Funk Railroad and Locomotion. And if I remember correctly, it was like red and blue, and there was a little white inside the 45 because the logo was those colors. And it had, obviously, Grand Funk Railroad, Locomotion, all that stuff. And I think I burned out that 45, bro. I think I just played it over and over and over. Let's see, what else do we have here? Singing Ian Baker, keyboardist with the group Jesus Jones, right here, right now, back in 1990, was a hit in the U.S., number two on the U.S. Open charts there. Love this guy. Born in 1967 on this date, Brett Anderson. Not the often injured pitcher in baseball. No. Brett Anderson, singer-songwriter from the alternative rock band Suede. Some of you may know him as London Suede also. Stay Together, all that. They disbanded back in 2003, and he briefly fronted the Tears and had released four solo albums. Love Brett Anderson. And if you're not into Suede, I want you to grab, which is the one with the heroin song. What's the name of that album? I got to look it up. I'll look it up in a minute and I'll tell you. It's like
Needles.
It's not called Needles. I'll tell you the album because it's got like a green, light green and dark green.
Brown.
No. Anyway, so a really good album. If you like Suede, or if you don't and you kind of like the alternative music, I'll get you into Suede and you'll be a big fan of it. I could tell you that. Joshua Farrow. I've seen this band. Born in 1987 on this date. He's the guitarist from the American rock band Paramore. All right. Let's see, what else do we have here on this date in music historia? Bob Dylan wrote a glowing review. Robert Shelton wrote a glowing review of Bob Dylan's support slot at the Jurdy's Folk City in New York Times, calling him one of the most distinctive stylists to play Manhattan in months. On the same day, Dylan played harmonica at a recording session produced by John Hammond. The Beatles, in 1967 on this date, working at Abbey Road in London, the Beatles mixed the new John Lennon song, I Am the Walrus, Cuckoo Ca-Choo, which included the sound of a radio being tuned through numerous stations, coming to rest on a BBC production of William Shakespeare's King Lear. Lennon composed the song by combining three songs he'd been working on when he learned that a teacher at his old primary school was having his students analyze Beatles lyrics. he added a verse of nonsense words. On this date in 73, Grand Funk Railroad went to number one on the U.S. singles charts with We're an American Band, the group's first of two U.S. chart toppers. The Police in 1979 had their first U.K. single with Message in a Bottle, the group's third top 20 hit song. It was released as the first single from the Regatta de Blanc album, also topped the charts in Ireland, reached number five in Australia. Despite its popularity in the U.K., the single only reached 74 in the U.S. charts. How about that? It's almost like it. Once we got to Ghost in the Machine, we then started to go back and appreciate what was already made before Ghost in the Machine, which to this day still is my favorite album, by the way. Ghost in the Machine is a freaking masterpiece. I know Synchronicity is the greatest.
No, what? Are you kidding me? Zenyatta Mandata.
Oh, that's also good.
That's when we got...
I mean, they're all good. Bro.
That's when we... There is not one.
No, there's no bad album.
Alain de Stey Amore.
No, it's awesome. I got them all.
All of them.
All of them.
Yes.
The entire catalog is the best, but I love Ghost in the Machine, bro.
I love Invisible Sun. I absolutely love Invisible Sun. It's probably one of my favorites.
It's a great song.
But... yeah, it's hard for me not to pick Zenyatta Mandata.
That's fine.
Because Zenyatta, for me, was the neighbors around the block. We all had our Atari, you know, at that age.
Yeah.
And his older brother would go to work, so we would take over the big TV. We'd throw in the 8-track of Zenyatta Mandata and play Atari all day.
Of course. In 87 on this date, Pink Floyd's 13th studio album, which is an excellent one, too, A Momentary Lapse of Reason, was on the UK charts. The shoot for the album cover involved dragging 800 hospital beds onto the Saunton Sands in Devon, but rain interrupted the session, and they had to repeat the exercise 2 weeks later. A hang glider can be seen in the sky, a possible reference to the track Learning to Fly. Photographer Robert Dowling won a gold award at the Association of Photographers Awards for the image, which took about 2 weeks to create. Never knew that. When I read that, I was like, wow, this is actually a pretty cool note. That's if you actually like Pink Floyd. 1992, this one's interesting. American singer-songwriter Paul Jabara died. Some of you may not know him. From lymphoma related AIDS at the age of 44. He wrote Donna Summer's Oscar Grammy winning hit Last Dance and Barbara Streisand's The Main Event and co-wrote the Weather Girls hit It's Raining Men with Paul Schaefer. Okay? That's why I wanted to mention, because most people, you tell them Paul Jabara and they're like, who the hell is that? And so, just in case, he's, you know, pretty talented, I would say. Keith Moon in 2004, yes, he was dead, but his 5-piece drum kit, custom made for the Who drummer in 68, sold for $215,000 in London to an American collector, setting a world auction record for a set of drums. It's pretty cool, man. These are Keith Moon's drums. That's not bad if you're a big Who fan, you know what I'm saying? U.S. rapper Kanye West on this date in 2007, 50 Cent was beaten by rap star Kanye West in the standoff to claim the best-selling album in the U.S. West Graduation. It shifted 957,000 copies in its first week of sales, while 50 Cent's album, Curtis, only sold 691,000. Only? Okay. Anyway, before the albums went on sale, 50 vowed he would retire from making solo albums if he was outsold by West. 50 Cent axed his forthcoming European tour and performed at London Mobile Awards, the Vodafone Live Music Awards in London, as well as the MTV show in Germany. I think 50's made like all kinds of claims and never lives up to any of them. Pretty much. That's kind of been 50's thing, you know? All kinds of, always. And he never sticks to anything whatsoever. In 89 on this date, a concert in Los Angeles, Glenn Frey joined Don Henley on stage for the first time since the Eagles last played 9 years earlier. In 91, Metallica on this date kicked off their 138th Whenever We May Roam World Tour in Peoria, Illinois. That's kind of weird that you would start a tour in the center of the United States, right? I saw that, and I didn't think much of it until I saw Peoria, Illinois. And like, why wouldn't you start in Washington or in Maine or in Florida or down in New Mexico, California? So, you know, one edge and then start working your way around. You know what I'm saying? On this date in 86, Iron Maiden released their sixth studio album, Somewhere in Time. A great, great album. That's it. That's what we had in Musica History. Okay? There you go. Good stuff. So Momentary Lapse of Reason took 2 weeks to make the album, just the album cover. And what a crazy idea. We'll drag 600 beds onto the desert for a shoot. Like, wow, dude, that's a lot of effort, bro. Damn.
Yeah, but when you have their money, you know, you could think totally off the wall.
Yeah, but by now, they won't do that for albums because they don't sell them anymore.
No.
You know what I mean?
Oh, no, no.
Like back then, they would go all out. It would
be computer. Yeah, it would be computer generated and stuff.
Right. Yeah, they don't even have to go out there.
Actually do it?
Yeah. Yeah. No, they won't do it now. No way. AC/DC, by the way, have launched a promotional campaign. This is good because it is now starting to get the ball rolling for the album coming out and then eventually the concert for 2021. They have launched a campaign based around the word Power Up, which could appear in the title of the upcoming song or album, along with a new website, a newsletter, and an update to its social media profiles. The band also placed a series of ads in select locations bearing the slogan, Are You Ready?, along with Power Up. A poster outside guitarist Angus Young's former school was also revealed. While no further details have been revealed, it's likely an album will be preceded by a single. The band was rumored to have shot a video for the song recently. Along the sole remaining founding members, Angus, the lineup is believed to include singer Brian Johnson, guitarist Stevie Young, bassist Cliff Williams, and drummer Phil Rudd. However, the band members' names are intentionally obscured on the new Power Up website. If this lineup is correct, the project AC/DC anticipated follow-ups to 2014 Rock or Bust, which, by the way, is actually a pretty good album, and I still jam it. I like that album. Will mark the return of Johnson, who was replaced by Axl Rose in mid-2016 due to health problems. Again, I am floored that it was 4 years ago already that I saw Axl and AC/DC. Time flies, dude. Williams, who retired at the end of the Rock or Bust road trip, and Rudd, who encountered legal difficulties, was replaced by Chris Slade before the tour began. Last year, D. Snyder reported that the reunited lineup was working on material written by co-founding member and guitarist Malcolm Young before his death in 2017. During the Rock or Bust tour, Angus said, Malcolm was always the one to battle through. He would look at me in times of crisis and go, we'll just go in and do some work. We'll sit and write some songs. He had that drive. I feel obligated to keep it going because maybe I was there because I was there in the beginning with him. So there you go. I can't wait personally for an AC/DC tour. I mean, that's going to be absolutely awesome to go see Angus and the boys one more time.
We've been waiting for what, 2 years for this, basically?
Oh, the reunion and the yes.
Because we've heard rumors about this for basically 2 years.
Yes, it's been about 2 years, yes. Did you know that Judas Priest was banned from Madison Square Garden?
What did they do?
They probably said that James Dolan sucks. No, seriously. according
to... Hey, they're going to be correct.
All right. Well, as you know, Rob Halford is taking out an autobiography, right? It's called Confess, the autobiography. So he recalls how Priest received a lifetime ban from Madison Square Garden in an exclusive excerpt from his autobiography. The band's performance at the legendary New York venue in 85, which was his second visit, and the singer Halford hoped it would be his last. Hope it wouldn't be his last, I'm sorry. But after fans rioted and caused hundreds of thousands of dollars of damage, they were never allowed to return. A statement by the publisher calls Confess the story of an extraordinary 5 decades in the music industry and the tales of unlikely encounters with everybody from Superman to Andy Warhol, Madonna, Jack Nicholson, and the Queen. More than anything else, it's a celebration of firepower of heavy metal. Well, they were headed back down into America, into Madison, Wisconsin. They had a they had to shelter 10,000 people under the bleachers of the Dane County Coliseum as a tornado approached. Glenn Tipton and I snuck a peek out the back door and boggled at the low black, blue, and vivid clouds overhead as sirens wails and storms raged. Then, just over a week later, our own tornado hit New York City. A second gig at Madison Square Garden, in a way, meant even more than our first. It hadn't been a one-off. We had become a band that we could play at the Garden regularly, or so we thought. Unfortunately, this was to be our last show ever. It was a great regular gig until the encore. We came back on, and I began wailing Living After Midnight. I caught sight out of the corner of my eye a flying object. And what was it? And here came another one, and another one. As the song ended, I glanced behind me, and I saw a pile of foam seat covers from the auditorium cluttering the stage. I looked out into the venue, and in the air there was black, with more seats flying towards us. One of them appeared to be all right. I ran off stage, jumped on my Harley for Hellbent to Leather. By the time I rode on stage, it was like trying to ride a motorbike through a floor-level, soft-furnishing jumbo sale. There were more seat cushions on the stage than in the arena. What the F? No, I'm not saying it again. Two thoughts filled my head. This is fantastic. Our own riot. And B, they're never going to let us play in this place again. Glenn, Ken, and Ian were by now bouncing on foam to play, and there was no bare stage left. Ken later said that it had been like playing guitar in a trampoline after a quick, you've got another thing coming, we scarped off stage and hid. Madison Square Garden later said, and the press repeated it with great relish, that our fans had done $250,000 worth of damage. We didn't do a thing to instigate the riot, but we got a lifetime ban from the venue. They figured we were more trouble than we were worth. A year or two later, Glenn and Ken went to the Garden to watch a charity tennis match between Jimmy Connors and John McEnroe. Not sure they'd be let in, they wore baseball caps. Halfway through the match, a steward came up to them. Are you guys in Judas Priest? Yeah, they replied with sinking hearts. Expected to get kicked out. Great. Thanks for the new seats, the usher said. We got the whole place refurbished. Thanks to you. I hope that one day Judas Priest can play Madison Square Garden again. Then again, history might repeat itself, so maybe it's best that we don't. So they were happy that it happened anyways because they got it all refurbished. And that's a really nice arena when you go to a place to watch a concert. I haven't seen a game there, but I've gone now to several concerts there now, and it's old. Like, you walk in, you know it's old. But they've done an exceptional job of cleaning it and then the reconstruction inside. You know, they did a really nice job. I say this because I've been to several arenas around the country. I've never seen a second level closer to the court or stage or whatever it is that's there than at Madison Square Garden. To me, it's the second level that's closest to the floor that I've ever seen. So it's a really cool arena, man. It really is. It's old, but it's well taken care of. The acoustics are phenomenal. And you know what? Judas Priest doesn't have a lot of tours left. You should let them play there one more time, bro. Give me a break. All their fans are, you know, they're old. We don't have time to tear up arenas anymore, bro. That's when we were kids and we were 20 years old. Okay? Let's see. What do we have here? Big O, the DJ's name is Leo Vera, and he's still a DJ for Spanish radio stations. Leo, that's right, Leo, on Super Q. I'll see you at Cherry's on the Bay. Yeah, I remember. I think I did say it was Leo, right? I think I remembered finally that it was Leo. The only reason why Right Here, Right Now was popular was because of the fall of the Berlin Wall. No, that was a good song. That was a good song from Jesus Jones. Give him a little love. Oh, did you get a chance to listen to Bebop Deluxe? Yes, I did. Did not like it, bro. I mean, the guitar playing is really good. The singer's got talent. The music was, but the guitarist is super talented. That I can tell you. I see why you led me there. I forgot the guy's name now. I want to remember it was like Ian or something. Maybe I'm wrong, but I will tell you this. The music, but the dude's got talent. That I will say. Let me, you know what? You guys led me to a couple of things. And let me follow up on it because I did it. Okay. Where the hell is it now? Where are you? Here. Hold on. Give me a second here. I will find it. Here it is. Okay, I listened to Bebop Deluxe, Gates at Dawn, I think is what you told me. And I listened to a few other songs, again, like the guitarist. Rainwolf, somebody sent me Rainwolf, loved it. I already bought a CD of theirs. Yes, I still buy CDs, I don't download. And I really liked them. The Gravel Tones, I kind of like those guys. I thought that was all right also. I really enjoyed the Gravel Tones. Heroes de Silencio, did not like. Vilma Palma, did not like also. Those I did not like. But Bebop Deluxe, I will say, I was impressed with the singer. I gotta say, I see some, as they say, skills with that dude. Okay? That I will tell you. Let me see. Do I have the right one? Okay, yes. I have the 29th up. So I did my homework. Those of you that gave me some tips on some bands to check out. What else do we have here on the text line? Hey, fam, kind of sad to inform you guys that I tested positive for COVID. So I've quarantined myself from everyone, just a bit worried. That's all. Herman, we pray for you, my brother. Stay positive. Stay, obviously, quarantined. And let's get through it, man. Make sure you stay with us here every day on the show so we know your progress and everything's fine. But we'll definitely be praying for you, my brother. You can get through this, man. All right? I hope you're feeling all right. I hope you're not having some bad symptoms, because obviously that's the worst part is catching it and then getting the bad side of it. Let's see what else. Everybody's telling Herman to take care, which is classy as always, because I love how when any of us have some kind of setback, we're all on top of it and we're all supportive. Hey, Big O, does Arnav have cojones now? No, I doubt it. That didn't happen over 24 hours. Thank God that Godzilla and the babies didn't destroy it in the 90s. Okay, I'm with you there. Polo, it sucks balls that the finals are being played in the bubble. And by the way, where was the Heat's confetti when they won the Eastern Conference Finals? Lakers got theirs, but we didn't. Something's up. Well, they probably, you know why? The confetti was all green and white. They probably thought the other team was going to win. Oh. You know, it's kind of like in Up the Creek, a movie that I don't think any of you know what the hell I'm talking about. But when they win the raft race at the end, the other guys that were supposed to rigged and were supposed to win, they already had the name etched into the trophy. And the guy goes, "You idiot, they didn't win. Go fix that." So, yeah, that kind of stuff.
No black and red confetti for our team.
Nope. Call of Duty, did you like Ninjin LSU? Huh? Huh? What the hell is that, bro? I have no idea what's that. Orlando, you will defeat Gustavo Cerati. He passed away. He was like Elvis in Argentina. He was the lead singer of to another famous Argentina band, Soda Stereo. Oh, you guys keep mentioning, I got to check out Soda Stereo. That's the second time you guys have mentioned this, and I forgot to check out Soda Stereo. I will check out Soda Stereo, I promise you. Okay? He is a mix of Sting, U2, and ELO. That's a hell of a mix, bro. That's some sick-ass talent right there, Sting, U2, and ELO. Wow. Okay. Damn. All right. I will check it out. Soda Stereo is prolific, a big catalog. Yeah, I think, Tremolio, weren't you the one that mentioned Soda Stereo last time? That one I guess I didn't write it down. I did now. And so you guys, whenever you give me homework, I will look it up. I will tell you the Bebop Deluxe, it intrigued me. I almost wanted to buy some of the music. Even though I didn't think the music was great, I really wanted to hear more of the guitar. Because that dude, what's his name now? See, now I'm pissed off because, you know, the guy showed me something, man. Here it is, Bebop Deluxe, Bill Nelson. That's the guy. Because apparently that band had a lot of rotating, musicians with Bill. Of all their albums, he had other guys do it with him, but he was the force behind that band. I read up on it too. And let me tell you something, that dude can play. That I can tell you for a fact. I wasn't that fan of the music, but man, I'm telling you, you when we get off the air, you'll pull it up. And when you see the guy play, you're like, oh, okay, no, that there's something with that guy. Something's going on with that guy. He's got some skills. Gustavo Cerati's solo albums are one of my favorites all time. Gustavo Cerati. Okay, I got it. I wrote it down. It's all right. I got time to YouTube later. I always got time to YouTube later. I can YouTube while I'm watching a little baseball. All right, it is time to wrap it up here on the show. We thank all of you, as always, for tuning in, supporting us. First of all, let's thank our super chatters. First and foremost, Kenneth Cleveland did a Duque today. John Rouse in the house. Steve M. Drew Boo also chiming in. Appreciate all of you out there for giving us a little extra love on the super chat.
We want information.
Who are you?
I'm a go-getter.
Who are you?
Dumbass material all the way.
I am not.
Dumbass.
I am a
super chat. Thank you. What is it? Ninjin Isu Shaba reminds me of Black Sabbath.
Wow.
Okay. Oh, I'll put a song list for you on Bebop. Okay. All right. Put me some stuff where he tears it up on the guitar, because that dude's got skills. You can tell. All right. That's the one thing that stood out to me big time in all of that. We thank all of you for tuning in. We thank all of you for downloading the show like you do every single day. We appreciate the immense amount of downloads that we're getting. Always appreciate it. Tomorrow, exciting day, man. Tomorrow, the NBA Finals start. The Marlins start their playoff run. You know they're going to win the World Series, right? You know the Marlins are winning it all, right? They're going to shock it. You know the Heat will win the title. The Marlins will win the title. The Dolphins will win the Super Bowl with Fitz. Then the following year, it'll be Tua that'll win the Super Bowl. You know, all these kind of things are about to happen for us.
We need to contact Vegas and put some money on this.
Put some money on it. Inter is going to get on a roll, get into the playoffs, win the MLS Cup. And life's going to be really good for all of us. So hang in there.
Are we field tripping it tomorrow?
Yeah, VSS West Pines. Tomorrow, Wednesday. Wednesday, baby.
12 o'clock, everybody.
Yeah, I don't even have a soccer game tomorrow. Wow, I don't have a long day tomorrow.
What?
I know. We don't play till Saturday. It's awesome. Got a whole almost all week from Sunday.
Somebody out there knew that you needed to watch the Heat game.
Either that or they wanted to give Higuain a little rest in between the matches, which was good because he played 99 minutes in his first match. Because we had 9 minutes of extra time in the
never heard of
in
nine.
The second half.
That's the most I've ever heard.
We had two in the so actually played 101 minutes because we played two in the first half. So it was a 101 minute match the other day. All right, you all. I love you. Thank you for the support on behalf of Bill and Philippe. We'll see you tomorrow. Be good.
Stay safe.